In 1895, as his state moved from the egalitarian innovations of Reconstruction to an oppressive redemption, South Carolina Congressman Thomas Miller appealed to the state's Constitutional Convention. "We were 8 years in power. We had built schoolhouses, established charitable institutions, built and maintained the penitentiary system, provided for the education of the deaf and dumb, rebuilt the ferries. In short, we had reconstructed the state and placed it upon the road to prosperity." By the 1890s, Reconstruction had been painted as a fundamentally corrupt era of Negro rule. It was said that South Carolina stood under threat of being Africanized and dragged into barbarism and iniquity. Miller hoped that by highlighting Black achievement in governance and marshaling a credible defense of Black morality, he might convince the doubtlessly fair-minded people of South Carolina to preserve the citizenship rights of African Americans. His plea went unheeded. The 1895 Constitution added both literacy tests and property requirements as qualifications for enfranchisement. When those measures proved insufficient to enforcing white supremacy, Black citizens were shot, tortured, beaten, and maimed. Assessing Miller's rebuttal and the 1895 convention, W.E.B. Du Bois made a sobering observation. From Du Bois's perspective, the 1895 Constitutional Convention was not an exercise in moral reform or an effort to purge the state of corruption. This was simply cover for the convention's true aim, the restoration of a despotic white supremacy. The problem was not that South Carolina's Reconstruction-era government had been consumed by unprecedented graft. Indeed, it was the exact opposite. The very successes Miller highlighted, the actual record of Reconstruction in South Carolina, undermined white supremacy. To redeem white supremacy, that record was twisted, mocked, and caricatured into something that better resembled the prejudices of white South Carolina. "If there was one thing that South Carolina feared more than bad Negro government," wrote Du Bois, "it was good Negro government." The fear had precedent. Toward the end of the Civil War, having witnessed the effectiveness of the Union's colored troops, a flailing Confederacy began considering an attempt to recruit Blacks into its army. But in the 19th century, the idea of the soldier was heavily entwined with the notion of masculinity and citizenship. How could an army constituted to defend slavery, with all of its assumptions about Black inferiority, turn around and declare that Blacks were worthy of being invited into Confederate ranks? As it happened, they could not. "The day you make a soldier of them is the beginning of the end of our revolution," observed Georgia politician Howell Cobb. "And if slaves seem good soldiers, then our whole theory of slavery is wrong." There could be no win for white supremacy here. If Blacks proved to be the cowards that the whole theory of slavery painted them as, the battle would literally be lost. But much worse, should they fight effectively and prove themselves capable of good Negro government, then the larger war could never be won. The central thread of this book is 8 articles written during the 8 years of the first Black presidency, a period of good Negro government. Obama was elected amid widespread panic and, in his 8 years, emerged as a caretaker and measured architect. He established the framework of a national healthcare system from a conservative model. He prevented an economic collapse and neglected to prosecute those largely responsible for that collapse. He ended state-sanctioned torture, but continued the generational war in the Middle East. His family, the charming and beautiful wife, the lovely daughters, the dog, seemed pulled from the Brooks Brothers catalog. He was not a revolutionary. He steered clear of major scandal, corruption, and bribery. He was deliberate to a fault, saw himself as the keeper of his country's sacred legacy, and if he was bothered by his country's sins, he ultimately believed it to be a force of good in the world. In short, Obama, his family, and his administration were a walking advertisement for the ease with which Black people could be fully integrated into the unthreatening mainstream of American culture, politics, and myth.